Dandelana Kitchen talks about food. Dandelana Kitchen talks recipes. Dandelana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Dandelana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here at our kitchen table to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And our kitchen table is located right here in the middle of the studio at KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, the center of Iowa, the center of it all. Thank you for joining us today. Here we are in August. We got a bit of a rain. My garden is just, and the weeds are just so loving.
Yeah, all of this, we're greatly relieved.
Oh,
right?
We are. This is the time of year when the garden says, no, you're not done yet. You have more to harvest. And come out here. So I've been busy. I don't know. It's been busy. But the bounty of summer, it's wonderful to celebrate the bounty of summer. Now, as a farmer, getting what you produce to the customer, or a grower of anything, getting what you produce to the customer is really a tricky thing.
Marketing.
There's farmers markets, there's websites, there's social media, there's mail orders. Making a living from what you love, it's a good thing. Growing a business and having a good time while you are at it. Joining us at our kitchen table today is Jennifer Knox. She is from Salt Liquors, and she's from here in central Iowa. Her business is called Salt Liquors. She and her husband, Colin Switzer, have been a wonderful addition to the central Iowa community, and she's going to tell us everything about what she does. Welcome to the Dandelana Kitchen Table, Jennifer.
Thank you so much for having me, Donna.
We're here. We answer to
Yay.
Both. We do. We answer to both. So we talked to Jennifer Knox way back in the fall of 2019 on our show. And
that was fun.
Oh, yeah. So how has it been going? And tell us what you sell. What's going on with this wonderful organization, this business called Salt Liquors?
A good food business, a good idea in food businesses.
Yeah, tell us about
Thank you. We sell herb and spice-infused seasoning salts and finishing sugars with no preservatives, no chemicals, no desiccants, and no additives, just the pure ingredients.
Tell us,
which is
define desiccants for those that don't know.
Yeah, what's a desiccant? Doesn't sound very good.
It drives out the blend. Sulfites.
Keep it from clumping.
Yes. Citric acid is a desiccant.
Ah, didn't know that. It's an edible desiccant.
An edible desiccant. And we think citric acid, they're milking oranges somewhere to get the citric acid. But it's actually a process of bombarding the acid out of, I think, it's not as fun as it sounds to make the citric acid.
Very good.
It's good stuff. Very important.
Well, and it also adds a tang. It has a decided flavor, so you'd have to factor that into your flavor profile.
When we come up to your stand at the farmer's market, or you can tell us, what do we see when we come up there? Of course, your smiling face is there, and Colin is there smiling. But what's on the table?
That is a great place to start, and such a great question. We've been talking about this a lot this summer because we've had a friend of ours, Tara, helping us out at a lot of markets. And she has been wondering, how did you come up with the system of, we have double-tier displays, which sounds complicated, but it's really like a two sets of two shelves with samples of our blends on top so people can smell them and taste them, and then the flavors that they can grab and buy at the bottom.
And they're in spice jars with red tops.
Little spice jars with red tops, which and you could see through the jar, which is not always the case. Being able to see through the jar means that light, especially in a retail situation, can access what's in the jar, and fluorescent retail lights can dim the contents of the jar with a flavor like Peter Rabbit or Allium. It can fade it. But we didn't know that when we set up our jars. So we have clear plastic jars. But if you notice, some of the fancier ones have opaque glass or opaque plastic. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is it maintains the color longer. But we have samples for people to try, and then we have samples for people to grab who already know what they want, and we celebrate those people. And people usually come up and they ask us, well, I'm looking for a barbecue rub. Mm-hmm. Or they say, I like a lot of garlic. Mm-hmm. So we try and match what we have to what they're familiar with. That would be a newcomer. And the skill set that I had to learn in this situation is very much akin to bartending. And I know that because Colin was a bartender for years, and he said, this is like bartending. And it really is. For someone who's never been in your bar before, they might want to try, what are your specialties? And it's a huge matter of trust that somebody would walk up to us and, one, put something we make, they don't know us, in their mouths. That's a big deal. And then they take it home and they put it on their expensive steaks or the stuff that they grew in the garden. This is a huge trust relationship. And I think that's why so many of our customers are referrals.
Uh-huh.
That if somebody says, oh, they're great, that trust is established.
That's one, that idea of it. Yes, it is. Because taste, and especially putting on herbs and salts and seasonings, it's a very personal thing. Can you just read off some of the names of what you are selling? Because it kind of tickles the brain as to what these little jars include. So what would the shoppers see when they look at these little jars? What are some of the names of what you sell?
This is important, too. They come up to our booth, and they see it has something to do with spice blends, but they don't recognize the name.
Aha.
So this is more distance from what they're used to.
Uh-huh.
So it doesn't say barbecue rub right on it. It doesn't say Montreal seasoning. So this is another level another level of getting to know you.
A unique feature of the product. Yes.
Yes.
Well, and so, we have to mention here that Jennifer is a writer. So she's creating a lot of writing on these labels. That's really fun. So tell us some of the names that you have come up with.
The first one, and we get our name ideas. I've come up with some of them. Colin's come up with some of them. I bet you could guess the ones that Colin has come up with. And friends and customers come up with others. So the first one is Allium. That's A-L-L-I-U-M.
Yum.
Because they are yummy, because they're all the ingredients are members of the Allium family, A-L-L-I-U-M. And this name, Erica Kent, who did our logo, came up with the name for this, and she said, oh, they're all in the Allium family, and they're so yummy. The next one is Ames Chili Champ. That's probably our most self-explanatory blend. And I actually won the Ames Farmers Market Chili Cook-Off with this blend. And I think one of you was there while I lapped the market with my trophy.
I remember that in Farmers Market history, that was a high moment because you held that trophy over your head and ran up and down the market. It was lovely.
I have never won a trophy in my life. I was, that was a red letter day.
Fantastic.
The next one is Bangladesh, which Glenda, who is one of our customers, one of our OG customers, she's in Ames. I think she does marketing. She came up with that. It's an Indian style flavor, also vaguely Trinidadian because it's got the tamarind in it. And we wanted something that was suggested the Indian origins of it, but was not, did not celebrate colonialism. So she came up with Bangladesh, and we said, that's it.
And it's not strictly a curry?
No, it's got tamarind in it. Mm. Which, when people say they don't like curry, they're usually referring to the turmeric.
Mm-hmm.
That's the flavor they don't like, even though turmeric right now is a real hot seller among the youth.
For
the
its
young people.
Nutritional value.
Well, they want a twofer. They want something that's good for you and interesting. If you look at the spices that are really hot right now, Berber is a huge, the top selling new blend.
Huh.
And the ingredients in Berber spice are almost kind of like an I dare you to eat this for a lot of us.
What's in your, what's turmeric. In Berber spice? Like hot?
It's got heat in it. It's got turmeric in it. It's got, I believe it has one of the big odorifics in it, like caraway, coriander, something like that, which is one of those spices that's like skydiving. You either love it or hate it.
Ah, very good.
So Bangladesh is, it starts out as an Indian blend, but it has those, little tweaks in it, like the tamarind. And we were drying rhubarb for one of our sugar blends called Queen of Tarts. And I had a smart attack, and I thought I should put some of the rhubarb into the Bangladesh. So I did that, and it's really good.
Hmm.
And Glenda noticed that the rhubarb shaved the spikes off the cinnamon in the blend.
Hmm.
It nestled it deeper into it.
Ah.
And these are the sort of things I love to talk about. It's completely unprovable.
Yeah. Flavor profiles. Yes, it is very subjective.
I could do a whole modern dance routine to flavor profiles and just be happy as a clam.
Oh, how wonderful. How wonderful.
The flavor that's very hot right now, being that it's corn season, is crop duster, which is that's one that Colin came up with. Is a finely ground salt and pepper blend, very finely ground. It was his idea. He said, why don't we grind up some salt and pepper, get a really good ratio on it.
Just black pepper, like Tillicherry. Black peppercorns, yeah.
Yeah, black peppercorns, whole black peppercorns and salt, and then we grind it very fine. And this is what I learned. Because I was looking for, why the heck is this stuff so good? By the time we get peppercorns in America, they're about 5 years old.
Mm-hmm. I wondered about that.
And what is the value of a peppercorn is the oil. So after that amount of time, the oil is mostly gone until you put it in one of those mill grinders and it turns it to dust. That releases the perfume, and if you want to preserve what's left of the perfume, you put salt on it.
Perfect.
Who knew? Perfect. Very good.
Who knew? And when Colin suggested this, I said, that's the stupidest idea I've ever heard. No one's going to buy it. So I, every day for the rest of my life, I eat those words.
But you are in the eating and tasting business, so there you go.
There you go. I'm completely cool with making mistakes.
Oh, good. Great.
Yeah.
Do you still make, one of the first things I ever bought from you, And I did it because the name was just lovely. And I wanted something with rosemary in it. It's called What's the Matterhorn. Do you still make that?
Yes, it's What's the Matterhorn. And it's rosemary and juniper berries, which are one of those skydiving spices.
Yep,
you're either into it or you're not. That is one of the first blends I ever made. And you have to say the name like you're in Jersey Boys. What's the Matterhorn?
Very good.
It was one that I came up with when I lived in Brooklyn and Colin and I hooked up and we were doing long distance. We used to have a juniper tree in the yard where I grew up, and I've always liked those. And I saw when I was living in Brooklyn, it was a big hipster food boom. They were making gin in their bathtub. They were making their own sauerkraut. They were making cheese in their little in lockers at the bus station. They were making everything, and I thought, I want to try that. So this is one of the first ones that I ever made. And another one of our customers, Julie, swears, she turned us on to the fact that What's a Matterhorn makes the best pulled pork in the crock pot ever, period.
It is really good. Now see, I've always liked rosemary, and juniper's okay, but I've tried cooking with both of them, and maybe I just didn't get enough or too little or maybe too much. And somehow the fact that you grind it up and it's easy to use, it kind of took away my inhibitions.
Well,
I thought it was
and
good.
Yes. Rosemary is one of the few herbs that it is easy to use too much.
Right. So
whereas juniper, one of those odoriferous, one of those perfumes.
And juniper is a berry, so it's kind of sweet and fruity. Not really sweet, but a little bit. So I bet you use more juniper and less rosemary, right?
Opposite.
Lots of rosemary?
No, we use double the rosemary that we use for the juniper. And this What's a Matterhorn is one of our highest salt to herb ratios in our arsenal? That's not what I want. I want in our
catalog.
Catalog. There you go. That sounds so much nicer.
Well, the combinations that you come up with are just dandy, and we will be talking about those all throughout the show.
Yay.
They are great. You shared with me a little bit. You sent me an email that had a study, a Cornell University of Cornell study about getting people to try things, to be good to themselves, to sell the idea. And of all things, it seems like buying these little bottles of, like you said, it's an element of trust. Why should people buy this stuff? Because who knows? And the idea of being good to yourself and treating yourself. Can you tell me a little bit about the study that was called the Specialness Spiral?
It's called the Specialness Spiral. I found out about it from listening to one of my favorite podcasts, Hidden Brain, that there are people who, and I do this too, I keep myself from things, from the good stuff. There's the box with the everyday stuff. I have two hand blenders. One has two broken teeth, so it's got a gap tooth, my gap tooth hand blender, and then the power hand blender. There is no reason why I am holding on to that gap tooth hand blender. I can donate that. I can let that one go. There has never been a time in my life where I am double hand blendering it. But I think, no, I'm going to save the nice hand blender for later. Why am I doing that? So our blends, once people cross over into this is for me, this is an everyday thing. And I think the people who have the most luck with that are kids.
Ah.
They say they have to have it on everything.
Very good.
First step in learning cooking.
Yes. And this is how they learn to cook. Oh, I put too much on it. I didn't put enough on it. Oh, it goes good with this, but not this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. I've run across that idea of specialness, too, because I don't do it anymore, but I used to sell vegetables at a farmer's market, and I'd have
beautiful vegetables.
I'd have a nice nice pile of good stuff. It's a beautiful tomatoes. And I've had people come up to me and say, oh, those are so nice looking tomatoes. Those are great looking tomatoes. But it's just me. I don't really need those tomatoes. Yeah. And they'll go off and buy a potato or something. Come on, folks. Be good to yourself. The idea of what keeps us from treating ourselves and also trying new things. That idea of trying the things to eat is pretty important.
I guess they haven't heard about this new craze called girl dinners.
Oh, do tell.
It's been in the media. It must have come from, like, you know, social media or something.
The Barbie movie.
It's apparently what a woman eats when she makes a dinner just for herself and she doesn't have to cook for someone. And it involves sort of like opening the fridge, maybe, you know, simple things like slicing the tomato and getting out the prosciutto and, you know, so people have been like, not that I do social media, but taking pictures of their girl dinners. It's like solo eating.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So your salts would be perfect for girl dinners, right?
I think our salts, our blends would be perfect for girl dinners as well as big shindigs and on the go. Every morning, I make a toasted English muffin, unsweetened peanut butter, avocado, and Roxy taco.
Ha! Oh, all right. Done. Wait, what's in Roxy taco?
What's in Roxy taco? Chipotle powder.
Uh-huh.
Which all of our blends, we sell them all for the same price. However, Roxy taco is the most expensive to produce because of that chipotle powder.
Ah. Uh-huh. I have
Yes.
So this goes on peanut butter and avocado? Woo!
Mm-hmm.
That's a girl breakfast, I guess.
Oh, fantastic. I have a similar thing, but I just do butter on a bagel. But my favorite thing to grab is something called French Tickler. And when French Tickler first came out, I brought it to the show and showed it to Donna, and we just broke into laughter because I don't know if it's an older reference, but French Tickler's got kind of a racy
it's
background.
Erotic.
Erotic. I do like your French Tickler. And that is my thing to put on a bagel. So, and French Tickler.
Mm, I just tasted some. Okay. Sea salt, parsley, yellow onion, tarragon, lavender, marjoram, and vinegar.
Huh.
Isn't that a good thing? That's kind of, so French Tickler is kind of one of my half, see, you roped me in, Jennifer. That is my, I have to have that on my shelf because it especially eggs and things and simple things. I like to put the French Tickler in. Why French? Why did you name it that, for goodness sakes?
That was a Colin name. And I have a good story about it.
Oh, good.
We had customers who had been telling us for about a year. They said, you all need to make a blend like Herbes de Provence. Because it's really good on red meat. Which that blew my mind. So I tried some Herbes de Provence blends, and we happen to have in our backyard the most enormous tarragon bush. It's like Snuffleupagus on Sesame Street. It's gigantic. And I thought, if we can make a blend that takes that puppy down,
what a good
that's a
idea.
Twofer. That's a two for one.
See, it's always have your thinking cap on and get two things done for once. Well, thank you for coming up with French
Tickler. Well, tell me how do you do vinegar? Is there a dried vinegar powder that you buy?
There's a vinegar powder that we get from our suppliers. We have a couple of suppliers that we use, and you can make your own powdered vinegar. You can do it in a dehydrator.
Oh, I'm
we
so glad I don't know. My goodness.
Yeah, we haven't. We've dehydrated a lot of stuff, but not vinegar yet.
Well, we'll come back and talk more about how Jennifer does this stuff and comes up with all these wonderful tastes. I want to remind folks, this is KHOI Community Radio, and you're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about Salt Liquors, a fine Central Iowa business. And we are talking to Jennifer Knox, one of the motivating forces and the creator of Salt Liquors. So we've been talking about the wonderful things that you produce. Let's talk about dehydrating, mixing, and tasting. So you mentioned dehydrating vinegar. I think that is it. I have a small dehydrator. I'm not even going to go there, Jennifer. Tell us about how things are made. You must have an awful big one.
You have commercial-sized dehydrators. How big is it? What's it do? How does it work?
It works the same way as a regular dehydrator. They're just bigger, and they can accommodate more.
But
less access to the outside. Like in a Nesco, which is the first dehydrator I had, it was seven trays, and that was pretty much non-negotiable. In our big Excaliburs, you could dry a giant pile of, let's say, collard greens, if we wanted to, just put them in to the dehydrator without putting them on the little shelves that are in there.
Oh, my.
And the heat source is connected to the back rather than the top.
So how big is this thing? Like 2 feet by 2 feet, 4 feet by 4 feet by...
Bread box.
It's about two. Let's do 2 by 2. Let's say
two by two.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and you just put it in there in a pile. You don't have to spread it out.
If we are, let's say, back to collard greens or kale, which we put into rooster snake.
Rooster.
Not to be confused with rooster shake. Although rooster snake starts out as rooster shake. Are we ever going to name two flavors this almost the same thing again, except one letter different? No.
Don't do that.
But
did we try it?
Yeah.
Oh.
And we learned and we did that. So rooster snake, and you can remember that it's snake because snakes are green. It came to me in a dream. I actually dream about this stuff. Is all the chilies that Colin grows. And all the greens that he grows, and they're in there together. So if we are dehydrating those greens or those chilies, we'll do them on a tray because there's less chance of them sticking together, and they just come out nicer.
Ah. So do you have to
easier to grind?
Do you have to cut up all the peppers and get rid of the seeds, or I mean, there's a lot of moisture.
No, we keep the seeds. We keep the seeds, and I think Colin cuts off the stem. Yeah, I think that's it.
With gloves, I hope. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
I want to mention rooster shake and rooster snake. Now, I have in front of me rooster shake, and I really like it. It's Colin's peppers, which are lovely, and salt, which is lovely, and it's quite potent, and I was adding it to something on my stove.
It's hot.
Yeah, you see, unfortunately.
It's not terrible, but
Jennifer,
it's got a little bite.
I inhaled some of that stuff, so be careful out there. It was an experience, I tell you. So
this is something I've learned. chilies are, it's a pain response.
Mm-hmm.
And tasting is deep smelling.
Mm-hmm.
So, you could breathe in and still ignite that same pain response that you would do.
I like that. Tasting is deep smelling.
Oh, very good.
Yes. Deep smelling. That's actually the name of my solo album that's coming out in the fall. Just kidding.
Oh, I know. I would just think it'd make a nice needle point on a pillow, you know.
But oh, yes. Absolutely. With noses all around it.
Oh, very good.
Colin, since I've known him and since I've moved here, he grows all these different kinds of chilies. And here, this is, I think, an interesting story and one that's right up your alley. When we started to make one of our first hot, sweet blend called GGX, I thought, well, this is going to be a walk in the park because sweet, spicy blends are everywhere, right? It's just a ratio. You use this much chilies to this much sugar. And
no salt. This is sugar and chili?
No. But this is how we learned what we learned about chilies from the origin of GGX. So what actually happened is I would put sugar in to the chilies we had for GGX, and then it would either be too sweet or too spicy. So I would add the opposite, and then it would be either too much the other way. So I just kept adding things, thinking, why isn't this working? And what I found was, and I found this on Reddit, every chili has a fuse before it binds with the, I think it's the T3 receptor in your tongue. And some chilies have a very short fuse, like serranos, just immediately explodes.
Ha!
Jalapenos have a very long fuse, so you could get the flavor of all the rest of the ingredients in GGX in, including the sugar, and then pow. It's a timer. It's a kinetic response. So rooster shake, for me, the pleasure of it is experiencing that kinetic response of all the 12 different chilies in it, which always changes because every season he grows whatever he wants to grow. And there's no genetically engineered peppers in there either, no Trinidad scorpion, things that are just meant to evoke pain.
Thank you.
Elicit pain.
Thank you.
He wants you to be able to taste the food. And chilies are notoriously adulterated. They are full of desiccants. If you buy them in a grocery store, mm-hmm. those bags of dried chilies, mm-hmm. they're just covered with chemicals that a lot of manufacturers don't list when they're packaging them up.
Ooh. Right. It's not required.
Clean.
Yeah.
It is not required. And ours goes straight from the garden to the dehydrator to the salt.
Well, whatever, it sure worked out good. And that's rooster shake, which is not to be confused with rooster snake. There is so much to remember.
Well done.
Okay, very good. Well, Donna was going to ask about shelf life of things here. How long, where do we store?
Right. We're always telling people, you know, our culinary tips are don't let your spices get too old. Use them quickly. They do age, you know, usually if mm-hmm. something has been sitting for after about the 6 month date, you kind of need to either use it or lose it, basically.
Right. And we were chatting a little bit about good ways to use it up. Block of cream cheese. Have a sour cream.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I like to do is take fresh herbs and oil and put them through the Cuisinart and add the spices there and put them in an ice cube tray. So the next time I'm making soup, you just lob one of those suckers.
Very good tip. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And you could also put the end of your Parmesan cheese in there. What? lemon zest.
Little umami there. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yep. Ooh, mommy.
Oh, I like it.
Well, tell me,
back to shelf life.
Oh, yeah, shelf life.
Our spices, even without the preservatives, last as long as any ordinary spice blend would last, which is about 6 to 9 months.
Yeah.
We recommend that you keep ours in the refrigerator, because there aren't any preservatives in it, and definitely keep the lid on it. And when you buy in glass, they last longer.
Ha, huh, good.
So the plastic allows migration through that barrier, which doesn't affect the taste, but it does affect the color, and it clumps. And clumps mean oxygen has been here.
And moisture, I suppose, huh?
Moisture,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So how big is your product line? How many of these marvelous products do you have to confuse us all here?
We have 25 flavors, I think. And that's not including the salt-free blends, the salt-free versions. I think about 25. I should count. Let's see here.
And you keep making up new ones, right?
Oh,
just can't help yourself.
I love it.
Well, because I have met you in person, and your mind goes wonderfully in many directions all at once. I asked you to bring a poem and share something that you've written, because that's another way to grab onto what's going on to your brain. You said you had a poem about horseradish? I mean, who would have thought?
I do. I have a poem about horseradish. A friend of mine was the curator for the Poetry at the Market project for the Farmers Market in Union Square in New York. And she said, do you have any farmers markety poems, knowing what I did with salt liquors? And I wrote this. It's about horseradish, and it's called Long Live the Queen. Did you rip out all the horseradish last fall? My husband asked me. No. I try to sound like I'd know if I did, but I'm unsure. And the thought that I might have done so makes me want to cry out, no, don't be all gone. Ingenious brain of shoots and spindles boring through the poorest dirt in the garden. We place the queen of odd hot crown upon your white filthy head. For when we pulverized you in the old meat grinder, your allothiocyanate filled the kitchen air like flying monkeys in the Wizard of Oz and sent us scrambling to the window, howling at your power. You and the brisket, another blazing crown, a mouth we'd never known. The single tiny jar left in the freezer will not be enough. Only knowing you'll be back year after year will ever be enough.
A wonderful poem. Thank you, Jennifer. I love horseradish.
My father-in-law and I made horseradish. We have a lot. We have quite a lot of it to take care of this year, and that was a lifetime experience.
The ode really to horseradish.
Oh, how wonderful.
Which does not dry well, by the way. If you're thinking, well, why don't you put that in a dehydrator? Draining the water out of horseradish drains all the power out of it. It turns into something that tastes like butter.
Really?
It's shocking.
Oh.
Shocking.
Oh. Well, that's true. Even when you buy the, quote, prepared horseradish that comes in the jar at the store, you know, when you first open it, it has a good, strong kick. After it has been sitting in the refrigerator for a month or two, it gradually has less and less and less heat. It just degrades. So what do? Freeze it? Does that help?
You freeze the prepared horseradish.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the powder that they use, I think that's adulterated with like a fake allio.
Like a wasabi kind of thing.
And and this heat, check this out. The heat off horseradish and off wasabi, that is a respiratory response.
No, that's why it clears your nose.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's why some people like one but not the other. You think that, well, you like horseradish, why don't you like chilies? It's not the same response.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. That's true. It attacks my head in completely the wrong way, different way.
And that's why we can eat it in, we can eat horseradish in sour cream, and it doesn't dull the response. Whereas horseradish and chilies, or sour cream and chilies, it would pave it, because that sugar and the film in the milk take the heat away.
Mm-hmm.
These are important things to know. We
absolutely.
I love talking about this.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
This is real Harold McGee kitchen chemistry stuff, right?
Very good.
Yay.
Well, once again, this is KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. I want to remind you that you can find out more about this fine show at www.khoifm.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're talking taste sensations here with Jennifer Knox. I want to ask about your business, and yes, it has grown. You said I know you from a farmer's market, and I'm finding your product in local grocery stores, and you say you mail things all over. How is that going? It seems that how do you keep up with the health and safety laws and all that sort of stuff? Evidently, you're selling this all around the country. Tell us about that.
Well, we've been very lucky in that we set up this business, and it wasn't on purpose. I didn't do any research and said Ames, Iowa is the place to do this, but it happens to be true.
Ha.
Because as a local business, we have access to the Small Business Development Coalition of Iowa and extension through Iowa State, which is a food science mecca. So one of the first things I did after the company was moving along, and we were already selling online, is I met with Brenda, who works for Iowa State Extension, and she has been a safety, food safety person for Nestle and big companies like that. And she's seen everything, and she knew exactly what we needed to do. And the first thing I had to do was take the Federal Food Safety Management, FSMA, class. So I am the food safety steward of our facilities here. And the biggest tenet of our food safety plan is it starts in what we buy and what we bring in. So we have suppliers who have to supply us certificates of analysis for anything that we get from them. And it also ensures that if there is a recall, that we are one of their customers, and they have to let us know that. And every product that we open from them, we log it into a lot tracking system that gets us the SBDC designed for us. Lot tracking software is phenomenally expensive and complex, unless you are fortunate enough to work with the local SBDC. And they hooked us up with a lot tracking system. So every time we open up, let's say, a bag of dill, we log in what day it was. We have the certificate of analysis, and we have little numbers. Here, I'm going to hold one up. See it on the camera.
Oh,
we have little numbers
on
the bottom of
the
jar. So that will tell you all the dill that went in there. That will tell you all the other ingredients that went into the jars, and where are the certificates of analysis for that. So we can document and track what comes in from our distributors. And we've had lately... in the last 6 months, a customer said that his wife has celiac, and he was worried about, they bought one of our products, and he was worried about it. Our biggest tenet of food safety starts in putting the ingredients on our jars so that customers know what's in them. So if they're worried about something like, let's say, gluten getting into a batch of our stuff, it's quite possible, because companies that make gluten-free products, that's like some Willy Wonka level science in those facilities, and we don't have anything like that. Our distributors don't do anything like that. So we have quality controls, but we don't have quality controls to accommodate stuff like celiac.
Ha. What about nut allergies? That's the other one people are always on about.
Cumin actually had a recall. I remember, I think it was like 2015, 2016, that there was a big batch of cumin that was contaminated with peanuts. And that happens. So if your children are allergic to peanuts, we recommend that you don't use our product, unfortunately, because we get our we know our distributor. Our distributor is, has been around for 100 years. However, they are not a peanut allergy protected facility.
Yep.
And wow. our kitchen is in the basement of our house. We have a commercial kitchen that's inspected by the state, which uses the same inspection guidelines as the federal government. But we're a house.
So, and you're putting peanut butter on your morning breakfast.
Yes, yep. I have peanut butter upstairs. I have peanut butter upstairs. You have to have, your facility has to be separate from the house itself, and ours is, and we don't bring any flour or gluten. But a commercial kitchen in Iowa, if you have a commercial kitchen, you can make anything in it. So we could start making yogurt in there, then clean the whole thing and go back to spices. We're not going to, because that's a lot of work. But people do that. So our food safety starts with being clear about what kind of facility we have and what our ingredients are, so that people who have strong dietary concerns can decide for themselves if they want to use it. And email me. I love to answer emails. I'm compulsive.
Well, do tell us about how people buy your food online and get it shipped to them. Where do you go to see all this stuff?
Salt-liquors.com.
Salt-liquors.com.
The dash is very important. Like Rooster Shake and Rooster Snake, we didn't know that we shouldn't, we should reconsider naming two flavors so close together. The word lick in any URL can trigger a cavalcade of strange results. So the dash, salt-liquors, very important. And you go to our online shop and you can buy our flavors, and you could buy all of our flavors, including the salt-free, the sugar-free, and any other variation of our flavors. Buy the half pound, the pound, in the little 2 ounce glass jars. You could buy samples, and we have gear too. So you can fly your freak flag, and our whole recipe database is online.
Oh, wonderful. Transparent.
And you could search by What's a Matterhorn. You can search by the blend names. You can search by corn. I have an ear of corn. What do I do with it? If you want to know how to make our market crackers that people love so much, that recipe is on our recipe database.
Do you have cocktail recipes?
Yes, absolutely. Oh. We have our list of stores online, such as Binford Avenue Farms. They sell the Hollis popcorn. Cook's Emporium, Dan and Debbie's, Greenwood Pharmacy in Waterloo. So all of our...
You're just all over the place, Jennifer.
Oh. Yep.
Well, we want to thank you for the important information you've given us, and my mouth is watering anyway.
Yes, and I'm good. Taking this. Tasting is deep smelling. That is really, that's a great way to put it.
Good.
This, I could talk about this stuff for hours.
We'll have you back, because we like to talk about tasting things too. And
yay.
So that's Salt Liquors. Jennifer Knox, a fine woman with a wonderful creative mind and really good things to taste.
Good business.
And remember, that is, if you're looking up online, that is Salt-Liquors. Okay. You heard it first here on the Donna Lana Kitchen. Thank you for being with us, Jennifer.
Thank you. It was really fun. Have a great time at the State Fair.
Oh.
Yes, very good.
Well, speaking of the State Fair,
Donna's been working on this. So let him know what's happening.
We have an announcement. So the Iowa Farmers Union is doing a, what are they calling it? Iowa Farms to Iowa Families cooking demonstration, right? So Lana and I will be at the Maytag Family Theater this Friday. That's the 11th, right? We're doing one demonstration at 5 and another one at 7. So the 5 p.m. one, I think, is going to be the early morning harvest polenta and Lana's candied tomato recipe. Mm-hmm. And then the 7, they may be reversed. The 7 p.m. one is dessert. So we're doing a lard-based pound cake recipe with Dean and Judy Henry's blueberries made into blueberry sauce and our rose geranium whipped cream. So talk about some flavor profiles there. That is this Friday at the Maytag Family Building Theaters, which is just off the main drag past the grandstand. And this is Iowa Farmers Union. And then next, on August 16th, also the Iowa Farmers Union is doing another cooking class with Beth Hoffman and John Hoagland from the Whippoorwill Creek Farm, where they are doing sausage making and then corn soup. So come on and see what the Iowa Farmers Union is up to at the State Fair.
It is.
And there'll be tastings of everything.
Oh, yes. We're making tastings, and tastings are always good. And there's besides all those tasting things that you can just have at the State Fair on a stick. So
yeah, ours will be clean, healthy, and delicious.
Yeah. So come and say hi. That'll be a good thing. Also, I want to mention there's a few more upcoming things. The Practical Farmers of Iowa have some more field days coming up. Summer is not quite winding up, but there's lots to do. There's going to be a field day August 20th hosted by the Black Sisters and Helena Thomas and Carlos Williams on the Sundog Farm. And we're going to talk to them next week, but also on coming up on August 10th, there's a field day on grazing and perennial forages at the Beth. We just talked about that.
And right, that's also, Beth Hoffman and John Hoagland at their farm. Now, Beth is the author of Beth the Farm. She is also a writer. So that is Thursday.
Good.
Yeah.
Also, August 10th, there's Creating a Legacy of Conservation in a Traditional Row Cropping, hosted by Joe Merton in Austin, Minnesota. Find out more about those field days.
Yeah, Practical Farmers of Iowa.
So, you've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We come to you live Tuesday at noon and repeated 7 p.m. on KHOI 89.1 FM. We had music by the Barn Owl Band today, and along with the Salt Lickers thing here, we're going to go out with a tune called Salt Creek. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.